Hi, it's Jeff, host of the podcast. Imagine a world where planning your books is as fun as writing them, where plotters plot in heroic harmony and pantsers organize without overwhelm. Here's the thing, that world exists. Plotters and pantsers alike love the visual outlining and story Bible software Plotter, now available both online and as a web app. Named the number one outlining app for productivity by Kindlepreneur, Plotter turns outlining and organizing your books into the creative process it's supposed to. Visit plotter.com/RW today. That's plotter.com/RW today. And experience the difference yourself. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is bestselling writer Jane Ann Krentz. Krentz's many books have sold more than 32 million copies, and she's been on the New York Times bestseller list more than 30 times. Krentz's latest novel is Sleep No More, which is the first novel of the Lost Night Files. Booklist wrote about the novel, "With her usual impeccable sense of aplomb, Krentz deftly begins her new Lost Night trilogy with a flawlessly paced plot that is both timely and timeless." Jane, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, if someone listening hasn't yet heard about your brand new book, Sleep No More, how would you describe the novel?
I write romantic suspense with a psychic twist. And the psychic twist, I just want to emphasize, is not what most people think of as paranormal. No witches or vampires are involved. This is that psychic step, one step beyond intuition kind of suspense. Characters all had a night of amnesia. They lost a night. They're now trying to find out what happened during that lost night, because when they woke up with psychic powers. And naturally, they started a podcast called The Lost Night Files to investigate other cases like theirs and try and find out what happened to them. In essence, they're using the podcast to solve their own cold case.
I'm curious, given that plot point, do you listen to many true crime or psychic podcasts yourself?
No. I when I listen to podcasts, it's usually, you know, for factual information or like, well, some of the bookstores have interesting podcasts with their authors, visiting authors, things like that. But I'm afraid I have not gotten into the true crime thing. I am a big fan of Murders in the Building, only Murders in the Building.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I'm curious, do you remember the initial idea or impetus that led you to write Sleep No More?
Well, I always like to plot with a psychic vibe, so that's kind of inherent in my storytelling. I just love that element. But the other thing going on with this story that is always intriguing, I think, for a lot of readers is amnesia. What did I forget? And more importantly, why did I forget it? And how do I find out what happened to me during those missing 24 hours? And I just find that a fascinating plot element.
And I'm curious, given your prolific career and the number of novels that you've written, I wonder if we could talk about the idea process for you. Do you keep a list of ideas, potential ideas for future novels? And are you starting to think about the next novel as you're writing or finishing writing your current novel? How does that process work for you?
Well, the short answer is I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So no, I'm not thinking about the next book. I'm not stockpiling ideas. I would if I could. But when I am writing, I am totally immersed in that world, in that story, those characters. And I literally cannot think of anything else. I don't want to think of anything else, put it that way. So I am focused on getting to know the characters. Part of my problem as a writer, and I would change it if I could, is that I'm not very good at figuring out where I'm going to go until I get there. I'm what in the trade is often called a pantster, which means I write by the seat of my pants a lot. The problem with that, of course, is that I never know where I'm going the next day. And the secondary issue, the real issue, is I don't get my best ideas up front. I get them in process of writing. I guess creativity generates creativity. So all those good ideas that end up in the book are good ideas that I thought were good ideas. Sadly, were not there at the start when I could have made a nice outline and just gotten up every morning, knowing exactly where I'm going, write that chapter, and then move on the next day. That would be a great way to write. I can't do it. So I'm kind of stuck with this process of stumbling into the good ideas and then going back and rewriting.
I was going to ask that, given what you just described, do you find that later in the novel, as you're writing it, as you're coming up with ideas that inform the novel and the characters and the plot, do you find yourself going back and weaving in info that will pay off, so to speak?
Yes, it's a matter of discovery, and every time you discover something, that changes something up front for me. But in the end, when I finally do get to the end, there's a sense of knowing that, okay, this is it, this is the book, and I can walk away from it at that. I can see it all, and it's a clear vision in my mind. I'm happy and walk away from it at that point, and then I can start thinking about the next book.
Sure. And what's that process like for you? Do you take a couple of weeks that you're thinking about the new book before you?
Yeah. There's a time frame there. I need to recover from the trauma of writing the one before it. The problem is, even though I've been doing this a long time, and some things get easier in terms of knowing what to do next, problem is actual writing doesn't get easier. If anything, it's just getting harder. And I think it's because I'm trying to find a new story for myself. I write first for myself, and then I just have to hope that there's an audience that can jump into the fantasy with me. But I can't write for that audience, if you know what I mean. I can only write for myself and hope that there are other people who enjoy the same fantasy. And there will be those who don't. Learn to live with that.
Well, I'm curious, given what you just described in terms of your process, as you said, the term pantser, do you ever find yourself riding your way down a dead end and you have to throw some out and go back and start from a couple of chapters before? What does that happen to you?
Yeah, that happens. It's more likely, though, that I'm going to find out I need characters I didn't know I needed going in, that I didn't allow for other stuff to happen, other characters to come on board and be important. That's the toughest. Physically, it's kind of the hardest part of the writing process, because then you have to go back and weave in a character that was never there at the beginning and you weren't even thinking about it at the beginning. So technically, I guess that's the hardest part of the process. But that's the more likely thing. I'll wind up in a corner and realize I need something else, and that usually involves another person, another character.
Interesting. Well, I'm curious, and I guess this is a little bit related to what you were talking about in terms of it not getting any easier. I'm curious, given the success of your writing career, does that success ever kind of enter your mind when you're sitting down to start a new novel? Do you feel pressure either from yourself or publishers or agents?
The pressure is always there, but I don't think it's a whole lot different now than it was back at the start. I mean, once you start getting published, you're under pressure. It's just, you put it on yourself, and if the books are successful, the publisher is going to put it on you. So I think it's just a necessary part of the business, and it's probably a source of energy to a certain extent. I guess it can knock you flat, but mostly it's just that adds that element of nervous energy that sometimes you need to have that second cup of coffee and go into the office in the morning.
Well, I'm wondering, can you take us back to your initial writing journey? I've read that you wrote and submitted novels for 6 years before your first novel was accepted for publication. What led you initially to sit down and start writing your first story, your first novel?
Well, it was not because I thought I could do it better than anybody else. That's for dang sure. It was, I had always read fiction. I had always leaned toward thrillers and but with a romantic element. That was always my favorite to read. And there came a time when I just wanted to tell the story my way. Like I said, I didn't think I could do it better than anybody. I just wanted my issues, my characters, my ending. I've always said in recent years, it has come to me that it behooves an author early on, and the sooner you get into this in your career, the better, the more useful I think you'll find it to identify their core story. And the core story is not the plot. Yes, I write romantic suspense, but that I don't consider that my core story. My core story consists of the emotional themes and conflicts that compel me as a writer. That's what draws me into the story. That's what I want to resolve. And so I would say that my core story involves trust and reinvention. Even if I look back at the start of my career when I had no concept of core story, I can see those elements at play, and I have spent my career exploring them. All of my characters are dealing with issues of trust. I think trust is the biggest risk humans take, and we take it every day so we can all relate to it. And all of my characters are in the process of reinventing themselves. Something has brought their world crashing down. Now they're going to have to find a new path. Those two elements I love to work with. My power from those two elements. Yes, I can bring in other things going on and other emotional themes, but those two will be at the core of the relationship and at the core of the plot. And I think that my one little tip of advice to anybody out there listening is that it behooves you to think of that because it sets you free as a writer. You realize that those themes that you like to work with are universals, and you can take them into any genre. And when you hit a wall, and sooner or later in this business, you will hit a wall, you realize you're not trapped in that particular genre.
That's interesting advice.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I'm curious, what do you think that that's what you were learning, or what do you think you were learning during those 6 years as you were working towards publication?
Okay. First of all, we need to step back in time, because during those 6 years, this is not to age myself, but in those days, there was no self-publishing option.
Sure.
Had been, I would have jumped on it. But the only route to publishing was through the traditional publishing world. And that's just a crapshoot. I mean, it's a tough world to get into. It's most of the time, it's sheer blind luck. And you just keep throwing spaghetti at the wall until some agent or some editor looked at it. And in those days, I think a lot of people didn't see, in the publishing world, didn't see a big market for romantic suspense. Just, you know, it's not selling. So therefore, yes, it's not selling because you're not buying books to try to see if that market exists. So I think that what happened for me was I was standing on the right street corner when the bus came by, when that market finally opened up and I was there, and it was such an element of luck involved. These days, I would suggest writers not wait, go ahead and do the query thing and try for the traditional thing, but I'd be all over the indie publishing thing at the same time, I'll tell you.
I was going to ask you that. Like if you were starting now, do you think that you would go the indie route?
Yeah. And here's the main reason why. Even if you don't sell a lot of books that way, you will learn a lot because this is one self-taught craft. You learn writing by writing, I swear. Yes, you can take classes and yes, they're useful. And I encourage people to get a handle on classroom, you know, find a class that will help you. But ultimately, you're going to teach yourself to write by sitting down and doing it. And that 6 years, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about making the story coherent. I learned a lot about pacing, timing, just basic stuff like that. And I learned a lot about my strengths and weaknesses. One of the things I learned early on was that I'm dialogue-driven writer, not a narrative-driven writer. I hear the story in my head. I hear the characters talking and they tell me the story. Other writers see it like a film. They're very visually oriented. I'm not. So for me, the story comes in the form of dialogue from my characters, and that makes me what I call a dialogue-driven storyteller. But you got to do both. I would just like to take this moment for a PSA, a public service announcement. Anybody out there reading my books, if you come to a paragraph or two of description, I would really appreciate it if you slow down and read it slowly, because it took me a long time to write. when I hit the dialogue, I'm flying.
That's great.
Narrative is painful.
Well, I know that in the past, you've contributed and you've written some nonfiction and some essays about specifically romance fiction, and I'm curious if, given you know your successful career and all the writing that you've done and all the bestsellers, if you've given what your current thoughts are on kind of genre fiction and commercial fiction and the appeal of genre fiction.
Well, I've always felt that genre fiction never got no respect. It doesn't get the respect it deserves. And as opposed to what we like to call literary fiction, which in my mind is another genre, but that's a whole other story. My point is that this kind of storytelling that we associate with genre, like Westerns and romance and romantic suspense and thrillers and, you know, when you see it. That kind of storytelling has value, but it has gone unrecognized simply because there's so much of it. And it's human nature to kind of poo-poo anything that's there's too much of. Who cares about, you know, why respect this? There's plenty more where that came from. But it's in classic genre fiction that our culture transmits and reaffirms its core values and its core virtues. And that's why it's so important. And that's why we keep doing it. And that's why we keep going back to it. We all know what a hero is supposed to do when the chips are down. It doesn't matter how whether he's a drunken alcoholic, like a lot of the PIs were, you know, in the old story, the noir mystery features mm-hmm. the PI with the bottle of booze in the drawer. It doesn't matter how many mistakes people have made. In genre fiction, when the chips are down, we know that a hero is supposed to do the right thing, take the risk, save the innocent, uphold justice, virtue, honor. And that concept of honor is really, really inherent in successful genre fiction. We don't talk about it a lot as a society anymore, but man, it's there in the books.
Sure, sure. That's a very interesting and valid point. I'm curious, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Aside from know your core story, which I
exactly.
think is, mm-hmm. yeah, choose your lane. Do not waste a lot of time trying to write in a lot of different genres. You probably know the genre that you prefer already because it's probably what you read. And start there. What am I reading? What do I want to write? And it's probably going to fit within the genres that you love. But you want to be careful about trying to do the bold thing and what, genre bending or whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it, incorporating too many elements from another genre into the one you've chosen, because readers choose a genre for a reason. And they don't all respond to blending those genres. They don't want to see it blended. If they want to read a thriller, they want a thriller. They don't necessarily want science fiction elements or horror elements or romance elements thrown in. The cozy mystery is a classic genre. You have to know the territory to be successful in that. It is not a romance with a mystery going on. It is something else entirely, and you intuitively have to understand that. So don't try to be too adventurous, at least not at the start of your career. Pick a lane and do something that's fresh within that lane. That would be my advice. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. I'm curious, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I read The Cloisters by Hayes, I think is the author's name. The Cloisters was an interesting novel because it's kind of a gothic, what they call dark academy, dark gothic style. But it was really interesting because it's a behind the scenes look at what really goes on in the giant storage rooms and basements of a big museum. it just had elements that were new, like an interesting background in the history of the tarot, which I knew nothing about. So I just found it an interesting read on several levels. I also read Deanna Raeburn's wonderful Killers of a Certain Age, which I highly recommend. These are four women who have been doing, they've been assassins since in their 20s, only killing bad guys, you know. It was the good assassin. But they're 60 years old now, and they have been retired. And as they are sent off on their retirement cruise, which was paid for by the firm that just fired them, they suddenly realize that they're not meant to survive the cruise. Somebody doesn't want them talking. So they go back to the old business, and they've been doing this a long time, and they know what they're doing. It's just a fun read.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful setup. I'm wondering if there will be a movie or a Netflix series of it.
It's made for it. It's really made for it. Yeah. Yeah, I highly recommend Killers of a Certain Age.
That sounds fun. Well, great. It's been great talking to you. And again, we've been speaking with best-selling writer Jane Ann Krentz. Her latest novel is Sleep No More. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Jane, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
We
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.